Hey there, I'm Beth Donaldson, an entrepreneur that puts hustle and heart into everything I do. The Hustle and Heart podcast will give you real and raw advice about overcoming and embracing failures, challenges, and obstacles in order to climb to the top. But it all begins with you. Listen in to each episode to harness your power and achieve more than you ever thought possible. Get ready to own it all because you deserve it. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Hustle and Heart. Today, we are going to sit down with Eric Dougherty and talk about AI. Is it our savior or our destroyer? Eric is a global executive leader who is always looking for ways to improve the health and well-being of others and has been working in industries with companies that value the same. Eric has extensive healthcare executive leadership experience as a global senior executive at leading companies that include GlaxoSmithKline, Abbott Laboratories, Glock, and many others. Eric holds two MBAs, one in international marketing and another in management from Washington University and St. Louis University. He obtained an executive leadership graduate certification from Harvard University and a global operational leadership graduate certification from St. Louis University. I am honored to have him on today to explore the controversial topic of artificial intelligence. Eric, welcome to the Hustle and Heart podcast. I am thrilled to have you on today to talk about AI and this controversial topic that a lot of people are really digging into these days. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got started in the field of AI?
Yeah, Beth, hey, thank you very much for allowing me to talk about this because I think it is a very, very relevant topic, both in my world, which is healthcare, but obviously in many other industries as well, from banking to retail and even manufacturing. You know, my background is in healthcare. I've been in healthcare for pretty much all of my working life. I worked in pharmaceutical companies, medical device companies, and also pharmacies, and have moved basically into the digital AI format with my last organization. You know, I've worked within different realms in the healthcare area, from cardiology to dermatology and plastic surgery, as well as respiratory and even mental health and GI. And so I think a lot of the work that I have done in the past has really allowed me to kind of push into this new kind of realm of data and AI. You know, what many of your listeners may not appreciate or understand is that machine learning AI, which is basically taking data, setting up algorithms, and then running that data through the algorithms to have a certain outcome, has been around for a number of years. You know, it's been used in manufacturing settings, the airline industry. They monitor their jet engines via machine learning AI. It's probably moved into the AI setting for artificial and generative AI, but in the past 20 to 25 years, they've been basically running it off of machine learning AI. And so what generative AI is doing to the field is literally taking that machine learning aspect of artificial intelligence and then finding better ways to basically set that data into better systematic modes of efficiency. And so that could be anything from drug discovery to basically making machinery work better to potentially making sensors and wearables work better. So pretty elaborate. And so within my last organization that I was in, it started out as a diagnostic testing platform organization, but because of the electrochemical biosensor technology platform we were working off of, it morphed into basically looking at data and then analyzing that data.
Yeah, that is super fascinating. And AI is just booming right now. It's super exciting. There's a lot of exciting things going on with it. What sparked your interest in this fascinating subject?
Yeah, I mean, again, being in healthcare, I've always had to use data, to analyze data, you know, run analytics. And so in basically either a marketing role or a sales role or running a business role on the finance side, you know, looking at data and figuring out, you know, how things can run better, how things can work better is always kind of the kind of driver of use of that data. And as I mentioned, within the last organization I was in, I started the company with the founder through COVID. And so it was a diagnostic testing platform, but it morphed into more of a analytics of the data that was coming out of that system and then running into basically a worldwide type of platform. And the ability to drive data from multiple sources and then have that data run through multiple algorithms at the same time and then provide that data back was a huge, huge win-win using generative AI, because you can take information, let's say in this case for a patient who is in a hospital or a rehab or long-term care setting, and literally, really, I think, have a deep look into that patient and how that patient is doing, and then figure out through the generative AI process what is the best next step to make sure that patient stays healthy or gets healthier.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I love that. And I know you and I talked prior to the podcast and how it's such a great thing to have for this data and being able to really kind of be more effective and efficient in different business models. But what about when the AI maybe hasn't been perfected yet and the data isn't necessarily accurate? How do we work with that?
Yeah, good question. And that's kind of really the, I would say, the drawback on some of the aspects of AI, because there is such a huge rush into this environment of data analysis. If you have bad data that's going into an algorithm, you're going to get a bad outcome. And so you want to make sure that the data that is going into, you know, analyzation, be it machine learning or generative AI, you want to make sure that that data is clean, you want to make sure that data is relevant, and you want to make sure that data is correct. And again, if you don't have those three, you can potentially run into some issues and problems and really some variance on the outcome of information that would be provided by that generative AI setting. A good example is if you type in certain things in the ChatGPT, you'll get some interesting answers back. Some of it's very valid if it's inputted rationally, but if it's inputted irrationally, you can really run into some bad responses that really don't make sense. So that's kind of the big issue.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of us are using that ChatGPT for a lot of business needs. I know that I use it personally. So it's really cool to have resources like this in business too. Do you feel like there are any ethical concerns or dangers associated with the AI development that's currently happening?
It depends on how you look at it. I'm going to answer yes with a caveat. So the yes would be, you know, there are the bad people of the world, I guess is the best way to put it, either the criminal side, the bad country side, the political enemy side of things, where there are some, you know, I would say bad enemies and bad people out there that are trying to use generative AI and even AI machine learning wise in general to really kind of thwart some of the things that are going on within security, within politics, and even within business. I mean, over the last, you know, even last year, you had the huge data breach within Change Healthcare, which is a part of Optum and United Health Group. And that was basically a breach of information where data of patients was basically taken out of their system and basically put on the dark web. And so, you know, that was potentially a Gen AI type of action point where they were able to get into the IT system of Change Healthcare, get to that information somehow, some way, and then export it out. And so, you know, there are some dangers around that. I think the good thing that's happening, and I, for those folks, hopefully they can link up with me on LinkedIn. I'll make sure you get the post or my link for that. But I posted just about a week ago that same type of topic where, you know, just recently, I would say in the last year, both the United States as well as the EU have put in place basically mandates and some of the rules and regulations around AI and the ethical use of AI and how it's supposed to be used, which is good. Probably needs to get a little more concise, but I think the benefit is that people are on notice now, that governments are now putting in these kind of ways of making things better for the users, be it ChatGPT or other, and it allows for, I think, good information to really move forward within the generative AI setting.
Yeah, definitely. I see so many positive things with it, but with it being new and developing every single day and innovating every day, I can see some of the dangers, like you mentioned, but also there's so many positive things. So with that being said, something that's really close to my heart, and I know we kind of chatted about this too, is do you feel like it will lead to mass job losses or the other way, create more opportunities for people?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to say no to the first part because it correlates yes to the other. I think it won't really lead to mass job losses. I think what it's going to lead to is job changes in job experiences, I guess is the best way to put it. The need for different types of areas of employment will definitely be needed. I mean, as we're moving forward, the ability, and as we've seen over the last 30 or 40 years, the ability to bring in robots as an example for manufacturing, you know, that has been upscaled quite dramatically in the last probably 20 years just because of all of the aspects of machine learning AI being put into it. But now you throw in generative AI, that's also going to be rapidly evolving. I think a lot of it is where you've got students now coming out of colleges and universities where they're getting more and more of the IT side of training, they're getting more and more the IT side of skill set enhancement. So I think that is kind of where the job losses won't be there per se. They'll just be kind of a changeover into other areas that have more of an IT potential focus. But I think that also lends itself to the new opportunity side of things. I'm seeing it where, you know, there used to never be a chief information officer that was related to AI. So in my healthcare side of things, you know, groups like Mayo Clinic, groups like Cleveland Clinic, a lot of the large health networks are really now putting in place a chief AI officer, which is very interesting to see because of all the aspects that fine tune themselves in the use of generative AI in healthcare. And I think that's where the new opportunity setting is really kind of moving forward towards. But even I think in the healthcare world on drug discovery, the healthcare world in data analytics of devices. I'm going to go to your kind of field specifically on more of the dermatological / plastic surgery / health and wellness side. I think the aspect of basically looking at new drug applications in a field of, let's say, dermatology, you know, having the ability to run generative AI to find a new drug to cure cancer, potentially for skin cancer or for atopic dermatitis or eczema would be phenomenal. And a lot of that could be done probably with generative AI. But I even look at the aspect of taking imaging data where you've got maybe a MRI or an X-ray or some other type of application to imaging source and having that information run through generative AI to see if in fact you might be a potential candidate for a cancer issue or if you might be a potential candidate for some other dermatological or healthcare issue. I think there's some great aspects that generative AI running that imaging data through different algorithms can really give a very, very good picture to the health of an individual going forward.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I love that. And I know we talked a little bit about even AI and you're talking about dermatology, but specifically in my world of aesthetics, like skincare, can you talk a little bit about your experience with the AI and the formulation of skincares?
Yeah, it kind of falls in the same line. You know, I'm looking at generative AI as finding the best sunscreen solution as an example. There's some, I think, work already being done in that area where they could potentially come up with a product that works much, much better than the typical sunscreens we're using today. On the imaging side, I think one of the things that's really cool is that if you've got, and there's some instruments out there where you can take an image of a person's face and see how much sun damage they have, you know, with generative AI, you could literally find out potentially how much more sun damage they might have if they use this product compared to that product. And so that's kind of really cool to see. And then I think, again, on the drug discovery side of things, the digital twin side is kind of phenomenal. So what they're doing is they're taking data and putting it into two sets of buckets, basically. And in essence, they're running that data through systems that allow basically a comparative between the two buckets, basically. And where that really is hugely beneficial, and again, I'll go to the skincare side, is that they can literally fast track kind of a focal point for a certain drug because of the use of that data. They can take bucket one versus bucket two, kind of run different elements of applications within those buckets, and basically compare and contrast between the two and figure out which bucket is better based on whatever type of systems they put into place. So it's really pretty cool. And again, from a I look at it from a healthcare side of things, you know, and obviously everybody, as we know, that's listening to this has been affected in some way or fashion or form with a patient who probably has had cancer, sister, brother, mother, father, et cetera. The aspect of conquering cancer, as an example, probably will be there in the next, I would hope, 10 to 20 years, which is awesome because of generative AI.
That's very exciting. So speaking of maybe potential like job losses, just something again that's kind of close to my heart, because I've even had some of my business coaches suggest like outsource your social media and your marketing, for example, to AI. Like you can eliminate jobs to really kind of for your bottom line business. But to me, that is not something that I would even want to look into, because I feel like with my brand, you know, it's very important to have that human interaction, not just for the brand, but also for my vision, and to make sure that it is always clear. Because like you said, we have machines that are doing things. I was even at a restaurant not too long ago where literally there was a robot that delivered the food. And I was like, what is going on? You know, it's kind of cool, but also we're losing that personal connection too. So even when it comes to like job losses and being able to replace certain positions and organizations, which I'm not against that in many fields, but I do think that certain industries or businesses really still need that person to really be able to speak that brand language and build a strong brand. What do you feel about that?
Totally agree. And again, you know, that's kind of my marketing side of things from my background, but you've got to have that customer service, that customer side of things. You've got to have that personal touch. I think that will always be there. I'm hoping, fingers crossed. You guys can't see me, but I do have my fingers crossed. You know, the only thing that I'm going to kind of throw out there is, you know, a lot of our Gen Z, Gen X folks are really into the social media side. And because of that, you know, with TikTok and Facebook and, you know, all the other type of platforms that are out there, they're kind of getting disenfranchised and not really, quote unquote, needing that personal touch. And so I think that, you know, over time, I'm saying that I think there is a relevant need for personal touch and customer service and that human activity. The folks that are, you know, coming up through high school and college now and moving into their adult lives may not feel that that's as important and may not see that as a needed activity. And so that would obviously change the dynamics around that. You know, and you mentioned the marketing side. I do agree. There's some pretty cool things that are out there that allow, you know, for quick social media pushes, social media information, et cetera. I think where there still needs to be a human personal contact touch is just the oversight of what's happening. So just to ensure that what is being portrayed or what is being provided as information is not only relevant, but also accurate and correct. Again, good data in, good data out, bad data in, bad data out. You know, the same thing can happen in those types of AI applications. And so you just want to still have somebody or people that would oversee that process just to ensure that it is correct as, you know, when it goes out into the public.
Yeah. And I truly believe too that the AI tools that are out there, even for the social media and the branding and the marketing, are so powerful for the people that are managing it to use to just take it to the next level too.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, this is the thing, you know, as we were talking earlier and then talking through some of the questions we'd be going over, you know, the one thing that folks have to understand, think about when we first got access to Google. And how mesmerizing, how informative, how transformative using Google was. You know, you could find out, you know, the address and find out directions. You could find out information. You know, you can query, you know, whatever, you know, historical time frame and get information, you know, back in a second. Basically, the same type of things happening with Gen AI. I mean, now there's a new way of getting information, a new way of harnessing information. And yeah, it's pretty interesting, kind of the application settings that it can move into and how rapidly it already has moved into, but also how rapidly it will be moving into some other areas of our lives.
Yeah, that's super, super exciting for us as business owners and just innovation in general. I think it's really going to level up a lot of things. Can you tell me, do you feel like we're doomed by the future of AI, which I know you're a huge advocate of it, so I can see where you're going to go with this, but also, are some people giving it too much power?
I'm laughing only because I'm of the generation of Terminator 2. So I'm laughing. I'm a huge proponent of generative AI. I'm a huge proponent of machine learning AI, because I know that that's a pretty solid application. Where I'm hesitant is obviously on the control, the regulations, the oversight, just ensuring that that's being done properly. But, you know, do I believe we're doomed? I would say no. We weren't doomed when Google came out, you know, and Google searches came out. So I would say no, you know, with the application of Terminator 2 and Skynet and kind of all that went on around that. Could that happen? I mean, again, if there's no guardrails, if there's no regulations, potentially yes. But I think if there are the right things in place to ensure that generative AI is being used by the right people, that it's got the query information that protects individuals and individuals' health information, if there's laws that are put in place on how the data is used and all of that, you know, I think we're going to be okay. The problem with generative AI is that we don't know what we don't know. And I think that as we move forward with its use is probably going to be, I would think, the major concern for not only, you know, businesses, but also for governments, for agencies within governments, and just the, I would say, the application setting of generative AI, where there might be issues as far as going forward, just ensuring that things are regulated properly.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I love the analogy you're using with Google, because it wasn't too long ago that we didn't have that. We didn't have that ability to Google, you know, any question we want to Google to find the answer, which, by the way, we also have to take that with a grain of salt too, because you can find anything on Google that may or may not be true. So I think that's a great analogy, just knowing that there are going to be pros and cons, and you have to be selective on, you know, what you decide to move forward with when you are using these to be more effective and efficient in your business.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the other thing too, and I mean, I'm sure everybody who's listening to this has had a pop-up on one of their Google searches, or if they're on a website, or if they're on some other search platform, they've got the pop-ups that come up. Well, a lot of that is analytics of data. It's analytics of data of where you've been or what you're looking at. But what's interesting with generative AI now is that they're taking kind of the aspect of, hey, I'm looking at Dick's Sporting Goods as an example. I'm looking at Nike tennis shoes, and I'm looking at specifically Nike tennis shoes for, let's say, pickleball as an example, because I know that's huge in the market now. You're getting pop-up ads now for, you know, other brands. You're getting, you know, pop-up ads for New Balance, or you're getting pop-up ads for On Cloud, et cetera, for the same type of shoes in that marketplace. So, you know, that's generative AI being used today. And so it's here to stay. It's a question of how intrusive it will be in our lives going forward.
Yeah, that's great. Love it. Do you feel like AI is ever going to become conscious? And what are the implications if it does?
Yeah, good question. I'm pausing there just because I don't know. And I don't think anybody knows. I think the aspect of the data itself learning from itself, that's already happening. The data learning from itself and learning a better way of learning from itself is probably happening. I think at some point, could it happen? Yes. If there's the rules and regulations in place, potentially no. But the problem is you've got those bad actors out there. You got the folks out there that are trying to find ways of doing things in an evil way, in a bad way. And I think that's where, you know, there could be some elements of some bad use cases, literally, where mm-hmm. we find ourselves, you know, kind of in a dark hole because of it. So, can it happen? Yes. Will it happen? Eh. I think it depends on how we handle things in the next 5 to 10 years on who gets access, how they get access, what they do with the data.
Yeah. And, you know, I know you've kind of gone over this a little bit, but if you want to dive deeper on how do you feel like we can ensure that AI is developed and used responsibly? I know you've mentioned, you know, making sure that we have guidelines and use it responsibly, but how are we going to make sure it is developed and used that way?
Yeah, and I mentioned it earlier. I think even having now a lot of these organizations, the major 100, 500 organizations in the world, putting in place not only their own internal use of AI and data, but also adding in structured employees and structured management of that side of the business. So having the chief AI officer in place and setting up things around that. I think is awesome. I look at like Mayo Clinic and Cleveland Clinic, in my world in healthcare, where they're putting those in place. And because of that, they're having determinants on, what type of data is collected, how it's being used, where it's being used, et cetera. And so because of that, I feel very positive on that side of things. And as I mentioned earlier as well, on the government side, having the ability now to put in rules and regulations. You've got that aspect that's very beneficial, but there's countries that won't put up their own rules and regulations. There's countries that will use generative AI against us potentially from a country to country standpoint. So you've always got to be mindful of that and just know that there's, good use and there's an unfortunately bad use out there in the generative AI setting.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. And where do you feel like the U.S. is with the rules and regulations and really making sure that this is, AI is going to be something that is a great thing for us in the United States? Where are we with that?
Yeah, I mean, the White House about a year ago, basically put an executive order out regarding, kind of the rules and what they were trying to define. There's some pretty hefty fines if it's not used correctly. So I think there's some good things that we've done. Probably needs to be a little tighter on where the data is used, how it's used, I think from an endpoint standpoint. And I think more importantly, who has control of the data? Is it in my world on the healthcare side, is it the patient that has control of the data? Is it the health network that they are a part of that has control of the data? Those are some things that I think that still need to be ironed out, because in my world, I think from a patient side of things, I'd rather have, the ability to either push my information to a specific doctor or another doctor, as opposed to somebody else making that determining factor for me. So I think that's kind of some things that still need to be ironed out. But I do believe that the U.S. is at a good point to really kind of move forward. They've got some pretty good experts, working with the government from the folks that are leading ChatGPT, Google, et cetera. So that's a good thing. I think on the flip side, are those the right people? There might be an aspect of bringing in, outside sources from, the leaders of healthcare, the leaders of manufacturing, the leaders of finance, and really kind of bringing them to the table as well, just to give their insight, their input, but also more importantly, their experience, and really kind of driving some of those regulations forward based on those folks' input as well.
Yes, yes. And so I know mostly you're very optimistic about AI and passionate about what the potentials are for it and how it can really change the world and businesses in a positive way. What is your personal perspective on the future of AI in general? And again, this almost goes back. It's really cool to see just things progress because, you know, as I live my life and evolve in my business and evolve in my life, it's just interesting to see like the Google that you talk about or even cars driving themselves. You know, it's just fascinating to think about where the world's going to be in 10 years. But what is your personal perspective on the future for AI?
Yeah, it's very healthy and very positive. I mean, I know, you know, again, because machine learning has been around so long, the aspect of moving it into the generative AI space is going to be hugely beneficial. And I look at, you know, on a personal front, you know, now we have the new iPhones that just came out, 16, that has the application of AI. You've got the Google phones that have AI. They're able to move around photos and do queries if you're asking for specific information. So there's some pretty cool nuances that are, you know, in our hands, literally and figuratively. So that's pretty nice. I think where it comes into play for areas of business, I think it will make things much, much easier. You know, I'm using Outlook as an example for emails. And so the aspect of AI is already in that type of platform where as you're typing, it already kind of can see your background of typing and how you've been typing. And it'll actually put forward either statements or words, knowing pretty much full well what you're going to be typing. So that, you know, it's scary in one aspect, but pretty awesome because then obviously you don't have to worry about typing out, you know, three or four more words. That's pretty nice. And then I think also too, you mentioned like the cars and those types of things. You know, obviously with Tesla and some of the other automobiles, they're having some issues with those. You know, there's been some accidents, et cetera, unfortunately. But even like the taxis and things of that nature, where they have certain routes, they have certain areas that they're going to be going on. And I think more on the order of repetitiveness, I think that's where those types of automobile settings will be perfect. Where I think, you know, for me, I'm always holding on to my steering wheel, and I probably will always hold on to my steering wheel. I don't feel very comfortable letting something else kind of run that. But I, you know, I do think that, you know, there's going to be some pretty cool things coming out in the next probably even 4 to 5 years that allows me to let go of my steering wheel and have a little more comfort around that. I probably still won't, though.
Yeah, I feel the same way. But then I think, hey, you know, who knows where it's going to be in 5 or 10 years? Because how nice would that be that we could have someone driving our car or the car driving itself and we could get some work done, right?
Exactly.
That could be pretty awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, and that's kind of happening in some cities. I know they've already got these moving around, like San Fran, and I don't know if they're in New York now or not, but they've got some other areas of the U.S. where they're running right now, you know, like up to millions of miles, which is crazy. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of going to be the future. I mean, you've seen the movies where they have these types of vehicles running around, and then, you know, the past is becoming reality now, becoming our future. So it's here. It's here to stay. It's here, hopefully, to get everything, I would say, from a health, business, finance, manufacturing side of things better. You know, it's not going to do everything, but I think it's going to be a huge help in many, many areas of what we do on a day in and day out basis.
Yeah, definitely going to change what we're doing and how we're doing it. What do you feel like is the most surprising or unexpected thing that you've learned about AI as you become an expert in this field?
Yeah, it's really been, I would say the understanding, yes. I would say more its use. I'm, you know, when it first was hitting the market, you know, in simple terms, meaning that, you know, people were becoming more and more aware of it, I thought it'd be, I thought it was going to have more of a skeptical approach to the market. I didn't think that it would probably move as fast as it has, just because of, you know, people not really knowing what it was, how it would work, et cetera. And what I've been really, really surprised at is just how fast it's moved into pretty much everything we do. You know, we've talked about a lot of those aspects, but, you know, just in general, I mean, you know, from making certain items to using those certain items to getting the information data from those certain items. All of that has been hit with generative AI, and that's been pretty amazing. And I think, again, you know, we've only been using it now for a few years, and look how much it's already kind of changed things. And I think that is just going to be probably sped up over the next, you know, few years, and we're going to find some really, really cool ways of setting apart kind of what we did compared to what we will be doing. And that can, you know, even to the point of, you know, getting into the space side of things, and obviously going into, you know, the extraterrestrial areas of landing on the moon and then landing on Mars. I think a lot of what they're working on today has a lot of use in that generative AI space. And there's, I think, a world of possibilities as we move forward.
Huge possibilities. It's pretty amazing. It's just, it's fascinating to talk about this because, again, it's just one of those things that we wouldn't have even thought about 10 years ago, a decade ago, that we would be able to have these tools and systems that we can really just change how we do things. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I look at it, you know, going back to kind of our, you know, experiences on the business side. You know, I look at AI on, you know, running a business and using its applications within business. I know you touched on earlier the marketing side. You know, I look at it on the sales side where you literally can input information into a CRM, you know, basically, you know, conversations you've had with individuals or topics of conversation that you've had with individuals. You input that in the CRM, and then based on information maybe about the person you talked to, they could actually run information through generative AI and let you know what to talk to them next about. So it's kind of fascinating from that standpoint. But I even look at it from the financial side. So if you're doing projections for a business and you throw that information into a generative AI type of setting, the outcome of information from that data could be hugely beneficial to show you whether or not this application of what you want to do within the business works, or this application of what you want to do with the business doesn't work. And so there's some, I think huge benefits on that side of things, where you can really kind of look at decisions you want to make, see if they are relevant, and then from the data within the generative AI setting, you know, see whether or not that is a good way to go or not. So that's hugely beneficial. And then even on the HR front, on the human resources front, they're already using a lot of the generative AI tools, looking at individuals' resumes, looking at individual social media platform spots, and kind of seeing whether or not that person is a good fit for the organization. So again, if you are out there on social media, make sure you don't put anything negative out there, because human resources, if you're looking for work, does look at that type of information. So it's moving fast and furious, but it's also very beneficial when you're running a business, because it gives you good, solid information. Again, as long as the data is going into it good and beneficial, you'll get good and beneficial out of that data.
Yeah, that's definitely a benefit for business owners with, and even, you know, before AI, like the social media platforms and being able to look at candidates to really see, you know, people need to be conscious of what they're putting out on the internet, because that's going to be there forever.
Exactly.
And speaking of the AI and just, you know, employees and hiring in HR, how do you feel about, for example, someone could literally have ChatGPT write their resume, or submit for their job, you know, postings and things like that. So how do you feel about the challenge of really weeding through those in the hiring process, even with all of the AI technology that's out right now?
Yeah, I mean, there are some AI technologies that can find out if it was written by AI. It's kind of funny. It's they've already started working on that. So there are some protective potential applications out there that supplant that. You know, you could do that years ago with some of these platforms anyhow. So there were some resume builders and things of that nature that were out there that kind of did the same thing. And it was built more on the machine learning side of things, yes. But you know, very similar. I think it really still boils down to the person. I mean, they can highlight a resume. Anybody can highlight a resume without using generative AI. Generative AI would just make it look, quote unquote, better. Maybe I would say read better, not sound better, but read better. So I think that is probably the only kind of, I think, benefit that it would bring. But I do think it's, you know, for some folks, it's if they think they have a resume that's good, they can run it through ChatGPT as an example and make it better. I mean, I think that's okay. I mean, it's kind of like the same thing of, you know, using a thesaurus back in the day or a dictionary back in the day. It's just a little easier to do than it was, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And as long as we have as a business owner, a really good interview process, we know that not everyone is what they say they are on paper. So whether that was, you know, someone else back in the day before AI came out writing their resume, there were services that did that. Or now they can use these technologies, and it's really up to us as business owners to have a very, very strategic process for the interview process to find the right people too. So I think a lot of that comes back to how we do our systems internally to find the right people.
Well, and that also goes back to the personal touch we talked about earlier. I think in a lot of cases, from a human resources standpoint, you want to make sure that it's not a data-driven type of application process. You want to make sure you weed out the people that may not qualify. Maybe they don't have the right education, the right certifications, etc., licenses, etc. But you still have to look at the person. You still have to look at the individual. They're not a piece of paper. They're not a resume. They're not a CV. You want to make sure that individual is compatible, yes, but you're only going to find out if that person's compatible and has the skill sets, abilities, you know, background, etc., by speaking to them directly.
Yes, definitely. So what do you feel is the biggest misconception about AI that you'd like to clear up with the listeners?
That it's going to turn into Skynet. I mean, I think that's it. You know, I think a lot of folks, and again, the skeptics, the folks that aren't really on board yet, I think feel or have a feeling of doom and gloom with AI, that it is going to ruin the world. And I look at, you know, like we talked about, I look at Google, I look at the different platforms that we're using today. None of those were around, you know, 25, 30 years ago. And now with generative AI, it just allows for new ways of using data and making things better. And so I think if you have that opportunistic outlook on things, I think that's good. Again, you want to make sure it's regulated and has its, guardrails put in. But I think from a misconception standpoint, it isn't going to harm unless it's not used properly. And that's where I think, again, the rules and rights make a big difference.
Yeah, and that's really true for anything. If it's not used properly, or, like you said earlier, like the criminals of the world or the bad people of the world, like anything can be a pro, you know, positives and cons to anything that we use, or systems or technology, just technology in general.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, you have those bad elements out there, and they're going to try to find ways of doing things bad. And so, hopefully there's enough good people out there that are trying to make it good and can thwart the bad. And so that's been going on for centuries, eons. And so this is just another phase of that. So I think the good will win in most cases. And I think that's ultimately, I think, what AI will drive towards, which is awesome.
Yes, that is awesome. Do you believe that AI will ever surpass human intelligence?
It already kind of does.
Yeah.
I think the speed at which it can provide information back, kind of already surpasses human intelligence. I mean, here's the interesting thing. We talked about imaging data, or we talked about kind of the sensor and wearable data. know, you pull that in and have the ability to look at a patient who's sitting on a hospital bed along with a bunch of other information, and you can literally in real time figure out what the next step is by using generative AI. And I think that is awesome. And I think, you know, in the past, you know, physicians would look at different options and kind of weigh positive negatives around those options. I think what's happening now is that with the aspect of pulling in the data into generative AI, if it's used correctly, can really make a one-stop shop decision for that individual based on the information that's been provided. So I think, again, it's faster, it's more concise, it's more relevant, and I think that's kind of the way of the future.
It's so exciting and a little bit scary at the same time. Yeah. I really, really love this topic. What advice would you give to people who are concerned about the impact of AI on their lives?
Yeah, I think for them, it's doing research. I would say, obviously, talking to experts, getting insight from experts, listening to experts and, you know, getting their side of things. I would say dip your toe into it, you know, get into it, embrace it, find areas where it can be useful either in your personal life or in your business life. And again, you know, like I mentioned earlier, we're walking around with them nowadays, our phones. So that's already, you know, part of it. But I think there are some pretty cool applications that can make your life easier on a personal front, but also make your business life much easier as well. And so embracing that and embracing the applications that can be used for both elements, I think is going to be pretty astronomical in the next, you know, few years.
Yeah, and like you said, dipping your toe in it, seeing what parts of the AI are great for your life personally and or your business, and it's a learning process for all of us as well.
Exactly. And again, you don't have to be an IT guru. You can basically, you know, access different applications either via your phone or pad or a computer and get information that way. And again, a lot of the tools that you're using on a platform typically would already have them. Many of the CRMs that are out there like Salesforce and Workday already are using AI. A lot of your websites, if you are looking at HR and applying to positions and roles, already have AI. Even Google has AI already. So, you know, there's some things that you're using on a day-to-day basis today, this morning or this afternoon, that already has an AI component in it. And so, you know, looking at ways that you can make your personal life better or business life better by using it, I think will be extremely valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like you mentioned earlier, the new iPhone has the AI. And I just personally got the new iPhone a couple weeks ago, and I'm not very techy, but I'm very impressed by the fact that it already can finish my text. It already can finish my email, and I'm still learning the process, but I think it's pretty cool that it can learn what I'm trying to say. And then it's convenient, you know,
exactly.
There's a lot of convenience to it.
Yeah, you just want to make sure it doesn't call anybody you don't want to have a phone call go out to.
Oh, it does that too? I need to be careful there. Yeah, I got to learn all that still. So, Eric, is there anything else you want to share with the listeners, including where they can find you?
Yeah, so on LinkedIn, and Beth, thank you for providing that to the folks. They can link up with me on LinkedIn. I post quite regularly and got a number of videos that really focus in on IT and Gen AI, et cetera. So I think that would be beneficial to the folks. And again, I think embracing AI is the future. And so, you know, if you as a listener can think through some of the aspects of where you may need help from an AI standpoint on the personal side or on the business side, you know, definitely make those decisions and find information and find resources that can make that happen. They're out there. They're coming at us fast and furious. There's applications every day that are, you know, basically being put forth that have some type of AI component. And definitely, you know, make it a natural way of life going forward, because it is our part of life today.
Yes, it is. And it is not slowing down anytime soon.
No, it is not.
Well, thank you so much, Eric, for joining us today and sharing your insights on AI. This has been a fascinating and thought-provoking conversation that I know the listeners are going to gain a ton of value from. I appreciate your expertise in joining us. And until next time, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Beth. Have a great rest of the day. Thank you for your time.
You too.
There you have it, another episode of Hustle and Heart. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your app and connect with me on social media so you don't miss a beat. I'll see you next time on the Hustle and Heart podcast.